Good morning. I'm speaking today with Nishant Shahani about pinkwashing in the context of Israel-Palestine. Shahani is professor of women's gender and sexuality studies in the Department of English at Washington State University, Vancouver. He's the author of the books Pink Revolutions, Globalization, Hindutva, and Queer Triangles in Contemporary India, and Queer Retrosexualities, The Politics of Reparative Return. He is co-editor of AIDS and the Distribution of Crises, and has also published essays in journals such as GLQ, Modern Fiction Studies, Journal of Visual Culture, QED, a Journal of LGBTQ World Making, and Postcolonial Studies. Welcome to KABU, Nishant.
Thanks so much, Lori. It's an honor to be here.
Well, let's talk about pinkwashing. Tell us what it means and how it has been mobilized by Israel in relation to Palestine.
Sure. So, pinkwashing is a term that has mostly been used by activists, political thinkers, scholars to talk about an explicit campaign by the government of Israel to market itself as anti-homophobic nation and a gay tourist destination. So pinkwashing is basically used as a detraction, sort of a smokescreen to obscure the violence of colonialism and occupation. And this is not necessarily a new tactic of colonialism, right? There have been many instances where colonialism takes on sort of a more benign appearance. We can also think of pinkwashing as a kind of national branding, right? A hijacking of LGBT queer politics to frame Israel as progressive, as cosmopolitan and modern. So what ends up happening is that the supposed LGBT-friendly nature of Israel is then invoked as a way to justify occupation of Palestine and to cover up policies of apartheid. And if these consumerist logics of gay tourism are invoked to frame Israel as liberal, then Palestine is conversely framed as backward, primitive, homophobic, sexually depraved. So what critics of pinkwashing have asked is that when we talk about this ostensible gay friendliness of Israel, the question is friendly towards who, right? Which queer body is being welcomed? If your everyday being is restricted by the realities of occupation, by apartheid policies, by the confines of checkpoints, then there is nothing really queer or liberatory about that.
There's no pink door in the wall, is there?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, you mentioned that pinkwashing as a strategy is not new. Could you talk a bit about its broader histories and genealogies?
Sure. So, yeah, as I mentioned, pinkwashing operates through a kind of messiah complex of saviordom, right? This idea that Israel and its democratic values protects its own queer citizens and can function as a savior of Palestinian queers too. And I think these logics of pinkwashing do have long histories and genealogies. And the work of post-colonial feminism has pointed out that colonization operates through gendered logics, where the saving of native women by colonizers becomes the narrative, the pretext to justify and consolidate militarism and colonialism. Well-known post-colonial feminist critic Gayatri Spivak has called this colonial feminism. And one of the oft-repeated phrases, and I might be getting this quote a little incorrect, but it goes something like white men saving brown women from brown men. So we could see this as one possible, genealogy of pinkwashing. I also think that pinkwashing shares its ideological operations with something like greenwashing, right? Where you have PR campaigns of oil companies like British Petroleum who actually invented this idea of the carbon footprint, right? Which poses very individual solutions for systemic problems, where, green consumerism is almost like a distraction device from how oil companies continue business models that increase carbon emissions. When I think about the term pinkwashing in a different context, I think of the work of Samantha King, who's written this book called Pink Ribbons, Inc., where she talks about pinkwashing in the sense of how multinational companies donated charity to the cause of curing breast cancer, you know, symbolized by the pink ribbon, while actually dwarfing public health initiatives and selling products containing chemicals that are actually, you know, linked to the increase of the risk of cancer. So I think in all of these instances, we see how PR campaigns of progressivism, right, the ostensible concern over the plight of women, of LGBTQ people, of wellness, of eco-friendliness, these are co-opted as cover-ups for other kinds of material violence, right? I think one way to think of it would be, you know, a kind of imperialism that is disguised as progressivism.
And it seems to me that U.S. corporations and the U.S. state have been quite nimble in adapting these so-called progressive ideologies to disguise its own imperialism and bombardment of other countries. I mean, if we look just more recently at the U.S. invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan's, often women, this kind of purple washing using Western feminist ideas of justifying the kind of daily bombardment of civilian families demonstrates this kind of irony or hypocrisy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it gets, you know, more pronounced, particularly after 9/11. I mean, thinking about all the, sort of the Gulf Wars and, you know, the saving of Muslim women, you really get sort of that pronounced colonial feminist rhetoric in that context.
Yes. Well, what would you say are some of the ideologies and structural patterns of pinkwashing?
Yeah, I like to describe pinkwashing as a kind of fig leaf when, you know, I'm talking about this to my students. It's almost as if it's a cover-up, right, to obscure the violations of Palestinian human rights behind this image of, you know, modernity signified by Israeli gay life. So in essence, I would say that it is a distraction and distortion technique. In one of the classes that I'm teaching this semester, we've been returning to the work of, you know, postcolonial Palestinian critic Edward Said, in which he talks about how Orientalism creates, and these are his words, an unchanging abstraction. And I think pinkwashing produces these unchanging abstractions through its investments in, you know, sort of binary structures, right, where Israel is marked as democracy, as progressive civilization, as opposed to Palestinians who are then framed as brutes, human animals, sexually depraved, homophobic. You know, Palestinian children are seen as terrorists in waiting, right? Women are seen as insidious accomplices. So you have a repetition, a constant repetition of these problematic tropes.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about the constant reference to Israel's need to defend itself when
right.
In reality, most of the victims of its so-called defense have been children. And
right.
Refusing to identify young people as children, but these terrorists in waiting, as you refer to them. And it also seems like this hyper-masculinism of Israel and the IDF,
yeah,
that even challenges the so-called gay-friendly or feminist-friendly identity of Israel, because it does seem to be pretty homophobic in its, you know, hyper-masculine militarism.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a sort of a paradoxical discourse, right? Yeah.
Can you talk some about the resistance and pushback to pinkwashing and its colonialist ideologies?
Yeah, you know, I think a critique of militarization has always been part of queer activism, right? Recalling the slogan by ACT UP, which is, you know, AIDS coalition to unleash Barr in, the late 90s, where they had this phrase, fight AIDS, not Arabs. And I just think that's so incredibly relevant today. ACT UP actually just joined in calling for a ceasefire. And it's this idea that, right, we are spending so much money on militarization that, of course, we don't have that money for healthcare, for affordable education, for housing. Queer politics has always been invested in a kind of redistributive politics. In terms of pushback, I also am thinking about this really excellent film that I use in my classes very often called Pinkwashing Exposed, and I hope we can link that with this interview. It's called Pinkwashing Exposed: Seattle Fights Back. It's directed by Dean Spade, and it's about a group of local queer Palestinian Jewish activists fighting back against, Israel's supposedly pro-LGBT propaganda machine. I think there's also been a very vocal pushback against pinkwashing by queer people through the rhetoric of not in my name, right? That you don't get to instrumentalize our queer identities to make occupation more palatable, right? More benign. Just as there has been very vocal response from organizations like Jewish Voices for Peace, who have been explicit about the fact that genocide and ethnic cleansing are not Jewish values, right? So I think this rhetoric of not in my name does really powerful rhetorical and political work here. And finally, I also just want to quickly mention the work of queer groups such as ALQAWS, which is spelled ALQAWS, ALQAWS for Sexual and Gender Diversity in Palestinian Society, which is headed by, lesbian activist in Palestine. Her name is Haneen Mikey. These are grassroots groups that are indeed fighting against patriarchal and homophobic structures, but also foregrounding that, sexual liberation struggle cannot be divorced from the daily material realities of occupation and genocide.
And despite the so-called superiority of North America and Europe, there are plenty of groups in these countries that are fighting against homophobia. And it seems to me that these groups in Palestine are equally invested in eliminating patriarchy and homophobia as they are against imperial and settler colonialism.
Absolutely. Patriarchy and homophobia exist in so many different contexts, right? They're not essential to a particular part of the globe. And I think that's what pinkwashing does. It sort of reifies homophobia in relation only to, the Arab world, the Muslim world. And I think we really need to sort of push back against those kinds of essentializations.
And there are plenty of Palestinians who've been forced to leave Palestine
Absolutely.
who are now working for some of these LGBTQ groups in other countries. Well, this is Laurie Mercier for the Omo Variety Hour, and I've been speaking today with Nishant Shahani, Professor of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at Washington State University, Vancouver, about pinkwashing. And we will link to the film that Nishant mentioned, Pinkwashing Exposed, and provide some other links about pinkwashing on the Old Mole website. Thanks so much for joining us today, Nishant.
Thanks so much, Lori.